Today, we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 7, text number 36, 4.7.36, and the chapter is titled The Sacrifice Performed by Daksha. Yajamani Uvacha Swagatam Te Prasida Isha Tubhyam Namaha Srinivasa Shriya Kantaya Trahi Na Tvam Rite Adhisha Na Angaye Makaha Sobhate Shriyahina Shirshahina Kabandaha Yatha Purushaha Yajamani Uvacha Swagatam Te Prasidesha Tubhyam Namaha Srinivasa Shriya Kantaya Trahinaha Tamriti Dhisha Nangai Makha Shobhate Shirshahina Kabandho Yatha Purushaha Yajamani, the wife of Daksha, Uvacha, prayed, Swagatam, auspicious. Auspicious appearance. Te, your. Prasida, become pleased. Isha, my dear Lord. Tubhyam, unto you. Namaha, respectful obeisances. Srinivasa, O abode of the goddess of fortune. Shriya, with Lakshmi. Kantaya, your wife. Trahi, protect. Na, us. Tvam, you. Rite, without. Adhisha, O supreme controller. Na, not. Angaye, with bodily limbs. Makha, the sacrificial arena. Sobhate, is beautiful. Shirshahina, without the head. Kabandaha, possessed of only a body. Yatha, as Purusha. Oh no, sorry, Purusha, a person. The wife of Daksha, translation in purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki? The wife of Daksha prayed as follows. My dear Lord, it is very fortunate that you have appeared in this arena of sacrifice. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you, and I request that you be pleased on this occasion. The sacrificial arena is not beautiful without you, just as the body is not beautiful without a head. Srila Prabhupada writes, another name for Lord Vishnu is Yagneshwara. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is said that all activities should be performed as Vishnu Yagna. Bhoktaram Yagna Tapasam. We all know this verse. Okay? Why? And then Srila Prabhupada writes, for the pleasure of Lord Vishnu. Why does everything has to be pleasure? Because of our bondage in the material world. It is karmic in nature. It is karma rather than akarma. And then Srila Prabhupada gives us three examples, so three evidences to bring out this point in terms of why Vishnu has to be the center and also there is the one that has to be pleased. Firstly, he writes, this is confirmed herein by the wife of Daksha. Without your presence, the wife of Daksha is saying, without your presence, the grandeur of this sacrificial ceremony is useless, just as the body without the head, however decorated it may be, is useless. Then Srila Prabhupada gives a second example. So the first one is, a body is useless without the head. Second example then he gives. The comparison is equally applicable to the social body. Material civilization is very proud of being advanced, but it is actually the useless trunk of a body without a head. Without Krishna consciousness, without an understanding of Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, any advancement in a civilization, no matter how sophisticated, is of no value. There is a statement in the Hari Bhakti Shobhadaya 3.11 as follows. Bhagavat Bhakti Hinashaya Jati Sastram Japastapa Apranay Seva Dehasya Mandanam Loka Ranjanam. And then Prabhupada gives the third example. The purport is that sometimes when a friend or relative dies, especially among lower class men, the dead body is decorated. Dressed and ornamented, the body is taken in a procession. That sort of decoration of the dead body has no actual value because the life force is already gone. Similarly, any aristocracy, any social prestige or advancement of her sister Devahuti was married to Kardamana Muni, and Kapila Dev, the personality of Godhead, became her son. Parasuti then was the aunt of Lord Vishnu. So if you can visualize this, you know, there is a sacrifice going on and Lord Vishnu has appeared. And Parasuti, who is the wife of Daksha, is offering her prayers to Lord Vishnu. And because Parasuti, by relationship, is aunt of Lord Vishnu, she is about to ask a particular favor from Lord Vishnu. And let's see what that favor is. And Prabhupada firstly writes that Parasuti will ask the favor in a very affectionate way because of the relationship as being aunt. And then secondly explains what is the favor. So let's discover that. She was asking the favor of Lord Vishnu in an affectionate mode, since she was his aunt. She sought some special favor. Also significant in this verse is that the Lord is praised with the goddess of fortune. Wherever Lord Vishnu is worshipped, naturally there is the favor of the goddess of fortune. Lord Vishnu is addressed as Amrita, transcendental. The demigods, including Brahma and Lord Shiva, were produced after the creation. But Lord Vishnu existed before the creation. He is addressed therefore as Amrita. Lord Vishnu is worshipped with his eternal potency by the Vaishnava, by the Vaishnavas. And then Prabhupada now explains what is the favor she is going to ask. Prasuti, the wife of Daksha, there is a sacrifice going on, and the sacrifice is going on with the priest of Daksha, some of them at least are not of the understanding that the sacrifice has to be for Lord Vishnu. So then she is imploring the Lord to give them the intelligence so that they can continue the sacrifice, but keeping Lord Vishnu in the center rather than being self-centered. So the favor she is asking is to convert or to transform those Brahmanas, you know, who may not be Vaishnavas, into devotees. Om Agyanati Mirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshunun Militam Yena Asmai Shri Guruve Nama Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvisesha Sunyavadi Pashyatya Desa Tarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vashadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, let us quickly recap the pastime that is unfolding. And this is the pastime of Lord Daksha with Lord Shiva. And we have been hearing this pastime for some time now at the temple. And I think this section of this Bhagavatam is coming to a conclusion. And of course now Lord Vishnu has appeared, so it's bound to, you know, set up everything straight. And then, you know, we start exploring the pastimes of Dhruva Maharaj. So if we quickly recap what has happened so far, Daksha, when he was appointed as the head of the Prajapatis, he became puffed up, he became proud. And in that pride, he also became angry and ended up blaspheming a pure devotee, namely Lord Shiva. So, to the point of actually not only showing off showing off his achievement of being appointed as the head, but to the point of actually also going around and actively soliciting pride. So on this particular occasion, when the ceremony is going on and Daksha walks into the arena, everybody stands up as a guard of honor to him, which is something that he admires, you know, and his ego flares up. But Lord Shiva does not stand up. So that irritates and infuriates Daksha. And Daksha then ends up, you know, showering abusive words to Lord Shiva. And as we know, you know, when we come in the Mangalarti at the temple, there are 10 offenses against the chanting of the holy name. And number one is to blaspheme a devotee who has dedicated their lives for propagating the holy names. So here, Daksha is blaspheming Lord Shiva, now, which is a Vaishnava aparad, big aparad. Of all the 10 offenses, the number one is a Vaishnava aparad. So Daksha ends up committing this offense of aparad. On the other hand, we see that Lord Shiva epitomizes the quality of being tolerant. He takes on all of that on himself and moves away from the arena without uttering even a single word. How many of us can do that? When somebody is showering us abusive words, little flare comes up now to say, no, we'll make it square now. No, bring it on. But Lord Shiva is very tolerant, you know, and that's the characteristic of a pure devotee. So then, when Daksha moves out, when Lord Shiva moves out, and Daksha again organizes another sacrifice and invites everybody, and this was a grand sacrifice again, he purposefully does not invite Lord Shiva, which then means Mother Sati is of course not invited as well, because Mother Sati is the consort of Lord Shiva. Mother Sati is the daughter of Daksha. Being uninvited by her own father or by her own family, she is contemplating why she has not been invited. Maybe my WhatsApp is not working. So she hasn't got the invitation. So taking that, you know, she is free to go to her family because Daksha is her father. She tries to self-invite herself to the ceremony. But Lord Shiva cautions her and advises her not to go to this particular sacrifice. And then Mother Sati ends up disobeying the instructions and the good counsel of Lord Shiva and ends up going to the sacrifice. And in there she finds, you know, that she is very unwelcomed by her own family. Only her mother is, you know, showing some affection, and the sisters. The rest of them just, you know, don't even look at her. So being embarrassed and dishonored, she decides, and I'm going a little bit fast forward in terms of recapping because most of you, you know, have been hearing this Bhagavatam class for long. So she decides to annihilate her body. You know? And that's where this concept of sati comes in, you know. People say that the ladies become sati because she volunteers, you know, to give up her body because her body was associated with Daksha, and she wanted to discontinue that association with a non-devotee. So she gives up her body. Hearing this news that Mother Sati has annihilated her body, Lord Shiva gets infuriated now. On the first instance, Lord Shiva tolerated the offense of Daksha. On the second, when Mother Sati has left her body, Lord Shiva is not going to tolerate this anymore. At certain point in time, you know, we have to seek reformation in those who are committing offenses, you know, and committing sins. So out of his compassion, Lord Shiva decides to end Daksha's pastime. So he sends Virabhadra, who beheads Daksha, and Daksha is killed. Then we fast forward, the priest of Daksha, together with Lord Brahma, approach Lord Shiva to appease him, to forgive Daksha. And they discovered that Lord Shiva had already forgiven Daksha. He was not angry anymore. Unlike us, or at least in my case, you know, when anger comes, it takes little bit time for it to go away. But in a pure devotee, you know, anger comes like this and it also goes like this. Because they control anger rather than being controlled by anger. So, Lord Shiva forgives Daksha and brings him back to life, albeit with the head of a goat, and Daksha continues the sacrifice. When the sacrifice is continuing at this juncture, no, when Daksha has offered a particular type of oblation in the fire, Lord Vishnu appears. So when Lord Vishnu appears, all the host of demigods, together with Brahma and Lord Shiva, offer their prayers to Lord Vishnu. And there are series of prayers. 20-30 of them. One of those prayers is this particular prayer, which Daksha's wife, Parasuti, is offering to the Lord. So that's where we are at this moment. Parasuti is offering the prayer to Lord Vishnu, who has appeared in the sacrifice which is being organized by Daksha. So what is her prayer? The wife of Daksha prayed as follows, which is on the board, right? My dear Lord, it is very fortunate that you have appeared in this arena of sacrifice. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you, and I request that you be pleased on this occasion. The sacrificial arena is not beautiful without you, just as a body is not beautiful without the head. So she is recognizing the fact that the sacrifice so far had been incomplete because the Supreme Personality of Godhead was missing. When the Lord is missing from any sacrifice, Parasuti is telling us that that sacrifice is of no use because it is same as a body without the head. And we know, you know, a body is actually useless without a head. If somebody's hand gets cut off, the body can survive. If your leg gets cut off, amputated, we can survive. But if the head is cut off, there is zero chance. So head is important. So Srila Prabhupada writes at the beginning of this pastime that when Lord Brahma appointed Daksha as the chief of the Prajapatis, that inflated his ego. He became proud of the achievement. So Daksha became proud of the achievement, and that's the topic that I want to focus on today, in terms of what is pride, what are some of the solutions. And I'm speaking not out of my realization, because I cannot say that, I'm someone who's not proud. I'm speaking more so from what I have heard, from Guru Sadhu and Shastra. So I'm a student of this topic as much as some of you may be. So pride is something which has got two aspects. Firstly, it is a sense of pleasure. We seek pride because it gives us that pleasure. Now, it is not unreal, it is not unnatural for us to seek some sort of recognition, pat on the back, the sense of achievement that we have done something well. It's a natural human feeling. To some extent, actually to a large extent, when somebody recognizes our contribution, whether it's in the temple, at the office, in the house, we feel inspired to do that service, or that activity deeper and deeper with more enthusiasm. So that feeling of seeking recognition, that part is not wrong. In the office, imagine if we do a lot of projects and we get no recognition from our superiors, the boss says, it was okay. And we have worked wholeheartedly on it. So we seek that recognition, right? When we come home, and when the prasadam is served, then when the wife asks, how is the prasadam, that's only when we say it's nice or not nice. But proactively we fail to recognize that the prasadam is nice, right? So in the office we seek recognition of our work. But at home we fail to give recognition of somebody else's work for the whole day. And that's how we are. So, pride has got another aspect. So when we only seek this recognition, of being congratulated for our achievement, that part is not wrong. But what happens when we also seek admiration at the same time? So we actively seek admiration to show that it is us who is in the center. So if you put that two together, what pride is, and before we talk in depth about how to solve the problem, pride is something that gives us the sense of pleasure and satisfaction, and at the same time we go and actively seek for it, whether it is in a subtle way or in a gross way. For example, if we decorate the deities, then we kind of very indirectly ask the devotees, how is the deities today, how are the deities looking? Because what we are trying to get to is not actually how the deities is looking, but tell me that I have done a good service today. or if I'm giving a lecture, and at the end I ask, you know, please give me, you know, some honest feedback. When I say honest feedback, what I actually mean is give me all positive feedbacks, right? Because honest feedback will be mainly the negative ones, because we are not, you know, perfect speakers. So there is kind of, you know, the subtle way of seeking pride. Now another thing is, we might not seek pride, but it might sneak in. Correct? We might not actively seek for it, but it can very subtly sneak in, just as all the other anarthas subtly sneak in. So, let us first explore what happens when we are purposefully or cautiously don't want the anartha of pride to be in us. Sometimes devotees will say that, Prabhuji, I don't want to do this service. I don't want to do this service because if I do this service, then pride might sneak in. I will become proud of what I am doing and I don't want to have that anartha. Now, when we actually say, if we analyze this carefully, when we actually say that I don't want to do this service because pride might sneak in, what we are actually saying that we are proud. Because why? We are making the statement on the assumption that we are not proud and pride might sneak in. We are making the assumption that we are not proud and pride might sneak in. Whereas the actual fact is we are already proud. No. I can't put the hand on my heart and then say I'm not proud of anything. You know, that sneaks in. That's being the, you know, the quality of a neophyte, if you like, you know, of a sadhaka. It's natural. So, therefore, if we are one of those categories where we are reluctant to do a service or reluctant to continue a service, thinking that pride might sneak in, then the solution is not the cessation of the activity. No? It is not to do that service, but to continue to do the service. Why? Because by continuing service, no, the Lordship, then there is chance of the purification coming in. No? And gradually the anartha will go away. By cessation of the service, the anartha will not go away. It will always be in the heart, and if anything, it will puff up. But by continuation of the service, the anartha will gradually go away, and that is the process of Krishna consciousness. No? Gradual purification process. And if we stubbornly, no, cease our activity and not do it, then what will happen? Because the pride is there, but I'm not doing the service, so I have got no ways of exhibiting my proudness or my pride, you know. I don't have any avenue to exhibit it. What we will do is start finding faults in others. Look at him, how proud he is. If somebody is doing a service, then we'll try to find out that, you know, because we are not able to display our pride, we will find pride in somebody else. Look at that Mataji, you know, how proudly she is, you know, doing the aarti. So it will find some avenue to come out. So cessation of the activity of the service is not the solution for stopping, you know, offing or getting rid of this anartha of pride. It is the continuation of the service. Now, secondly, if we don't actively seek pride, you know, and that is, let's say, you know, it's a genuine attempt not to actively seek pride, and at the same time, when we do the activity or do the service, we are not seeking pride, but then pride sneaks in somehow or the other. Just as lust, anger, greed, envy sneaks in our mind and heart time to time, pride also sneaks in. And Krishna tells us in Bhagavad Gita, at the beginning of chapter 16, which is titled Divine and Demoniac Nature, qualities or nature, characteristics. Yeah, divine and demoniac characteristics. And Krishna lists amongst, you know, those characteristics that are demoniac, pride is one of them. Pride, ego, arrogance, lust, envy, you know, is one of the demoniac nature. So, how do we find a solution to this problem? Let's look at a couple of situational analysis, you know, or case studies, as we say, you know, and then see how, you know, what's the root cause of the problem, and then what can we do to, you know, to some extent mitigate it. Firstly, if we see, there are many situations, you know, when we can become proud, but let's take one of them. For example, If we are giving a lecture, whether we are giving a lecture at the temple, in the Bhakti Vriksha, you know, to a new community, or even speaking in the office, you know, to our colleagues, to give them Krishna consciousness, or even with the families, what happens time to time, especially when we are speaking with new people, you know, in the office, to families, to friends, we somehow or the other, the mind tricks us that we know a lot. And the other person doesn't know anything about Krishna consciousness, anything about Vedas, anything about spirituality. So let me bombard him with all this information and show him that how much I know. So we miss the target. The target of, the goal of our preaching is what? To make somebody educated and aware about Krishna. Correct? The goal of preaching is to make somebody aware about Krishna. What actually becomes our goal sometimes when we are proud, the goal becomes to tell the other person how much we know about Krishna. So we become the center. And that is the fallacy. So, what can we do? Firstly, excuse me. Firstly, we have to recognize that when we are sharing knowledge about Krishna consciousness with others, what is the source of the knowledge? Where does the knowledge come from? Evam parampara praptam. Krishna tells us that this knowledge comes from the parampara, starting from him only. So the source of the knowledge is Krishna, which Srila Prabhupada has nicely delivered to us in a way that is palatable. And then we use the analogies that are there in Guru, Sadhu and Shastra only when we are preaching to the others. So we are not the source of the knowledge. What is there to be proud of? Correct? Now one may argue, okay, I am cognizant that I am not the source of the knowledge. But intelligence is mine only, na? I am the one who is analyzing this information in a way that is presentable to those who are junior to me. So that can, then by, if we think like that, then the pride can again kick in. Because knowledge, the source is Krishna, but I am the intelligence behind this. What can we realize then is that Krishna tells us in Bhagavad Gita that he is the intelligence giver as well. Krishna is the ability in man and he also gives us the intelligence. So the intelligence that we become proud of, we have to be cognizant that also comes from Krishna. And we have got these real practical examples and realizations in our own life. No? Our own intelligence a lot of time betrays us. Correct? We know that we have got the intelligence to do something nicely, but a lot of occasions are there when we are not able to do as our mind, as our intelligence says, because mind kicks in, no? And makes us do things beyond our intelligence. The ability to do something also comes from Krishna. Otherwise, we should be able to do the same service, the same activity, at the same rate, at the same pace, with the same quality every time. But we are not able to. Whether it's giving a lecture, whether it's cooking, sometimes the same recipe we follow comes out nice, and the other time it doesn't come out nice. Correct? So that means there is some other factors, which is the Krishna factor behind it, rather than the I factor. And we, even if you take it to materialistic outside, you know, outside the devotional service, even if you are a cricket player, you know that you can bat well, but you are not able to bat well at the same pace every time. And we saw this recently in Melbourne as well, a team that won, quite comprehensively, a week later is becoming the embarrassment of the whole world. Okay, I understand it's the two different codes, one is a test match, the other is a one day, but the same players are not being able to perform when they are in the other court. So it tells us that it was not their ability that made them win. Of course, it's, their contribution is there. I'm not denying it. But there is another factor behind all these achievements. No? In their case, it's their karmic reaction which is giving them that positive reaction. But that karma, that karmic reaction also is coming from Krishna only. He is the provider of the intelligence. And the third thing, so far I have said, remember the source. Source comes from Krishna. Remember that it's not just us who has got the intelligence and the ability to deliver it. There's a Krishna factor. And thirdly, when we seek the honor of pride, we, and for that matter any of these anarthas, we have to realize, and we have got our own realizations on this, is that it does not give us everlasting satisfaction. The satisfaction and pleasure that comes from these activities is very temporary, and non-permanent. And sometimes it can actually cause miseries in life. For example, if we, again, you know, let's take my example again. You know, if I'm giving a lecture and I'm thinking that after the lecture, I will get a lot of admiration from all of you, you know, a lot of positive feedback, you know, a lot of encouragement, then what is happening that my satisfaction is now dependent on you. Because if you come and give me that adoration, no, then my ego will be puffed up. So I'm happy. But if you don't come up, and I know you will not come up, then in that case, you know, I will feel more miserable. So pride is actually like another intoxication, you know. When, you know, a drunkard is consuming alcohol, his satisfaction is not reached. He just wants to drink more and more and more until he falls in the gutter and wakes up at 5 o'clock for Mangalarti. Because that's when generally the drunkards wake up. Not that they will come for Mangalarti, but at least they wake up for that time, you know. So when they wake up, they want more booze. Yeah. So their satisfaction is now dependent on the alcohol, which is not permanent. They want more and more and more. So similarly, when we actively seek pride or when pride kicks in, we are dependent on somebody else's welfare to make us happy. Whereas our philosophy of Krishna consciousness and our own realization is what? Our satisfaction is dependent on Krishna. If we can satisfy him, then he will satisfy us, you know, then he's satisfying us. And the pleasure that we get, you know, in doing Krishna consciousness activities, whether it is, you know, decorating the deities, whether it is cooking prasadam, bhoga, whether it is, you know, giving a lecture, whether it is studying, whether it is chanting Harinam, you know, all those pleasure we have realized is far more greater than the pleasure that we actually derive in any of the anarthas that we get consumed in. Param, Krishna tells us, Param Drishtava Nivartate, that the higher taste is there in Krishna consciousness activities rather than in the mundane activities. So if we, you know, these three parameters help me time to time, you know, in terms of to get me back on the track. Remember the source, that the source is Krishna. Remember that the intelligence and the ability is also coming from Krishna. And remember that the pleasure that we might seek in anarthas are not permanent. They are temporary in nature. And it can cause misery if we just want to continue to seek it and if it doesn't come. Whereas the pleasure that we get from Krishna consciousness is everlasting and is always purifying. And I had this good realization when I was growing up in Krishna consciousness as well. When I was going to my first Krishna conscious program, you know, and I'm one of those boys out of the Bhakta Bhavan program, thanks to Nityanand Priya Prabhu and Vasudha Priya Mataji. When I was going to their program, I was going with my good friend, and these are my early days of Krishna consciousness. Yeah. So, what they do in Bhakti Vriksha, which most of you are probably have been through some Bhakti Vriksha or the other, you know, when it comes to birthdays, there's a cake cutting. End of the month, there is a cake cutting for all those people whose birthday, devotees whose birthday has been in that month. Yeah. So, my friend and I were saying, when we saw the first birthday cake being cut, you know, and how the devotees were glorifying, you know, the person whose birthday was there. So we say, whatever happens, we must come to this Bhakti Vriksha when our birthday is there. Whether rain, shine or hail, you know, our cake has to be there. Otherwise, it's an aparad, you know. So, and I'm embarrassing myself, you know, but to be honest with you, in that first year of Bhakti Vriksha, you know, when my birthday was there, you know, I made sure days before that, I'm not going to miss this Bhakti Vriksha today. I must be there. Fast forward second year, and in both of our case, my friend and mine, when the cake was being organized, we were getting little bit reserved of going to the Bhakti Vriksha. It was almost like, you know, the adoration that will come, it's quite embarrassing actually. You know, when people get you and then you cut the cake and everybody's looking at you, you smile, Prabhu, you know, and then take pictures and all that and put it on Facebook and all that. It's like, I'm not sure whether I want to do all this, you know, like, okay, I'm loving it that you are celebrating my birthday, but I don't want the adoration. That kind of feeling comes, you know, in the second year. So we went through that phase, that second phase. In the third year, what happens, which is quite remarkable in my friend's case, he didn't come for the month where the birthday was there. He said, Prabhu, whatever happens, I'm not going there. Because the devotee's adoration is like, you know, thorns. Now, they are praising me like this, and I know that when I came to Krishna consciousness initially, I thought I'm a pure devotee and everybody else is, you know, just junior. And I thought I knew everything about spirituality. I was ready to preach to everybody. But in these 3 years of Krishna consciousness in Bhakti Vriksha, it has made me realize that I know nothing. No. And there's so much books that Srila Prabhupada has written, and I don't have even time to read Bhagavad Gita. No. What we speak about Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita. I have got no knowledge about Krishna consciousness as well. And I also have become realized that I don't have bhakti. No? I'm not a pure devotee. And I've got so many anarthas. So when people are glorifying me, I know that I'm not that. Because how do devotees glorify? No? You are a pure devotee. No? You are so humble. No? You are so nice. Devotees love glorifying devotees. And we know a lot of time when we get glorified, it's quite exaggerated. Because we are not that. But devotees do that service. So, in the third year, he had the realization that he is not coming to the Bhakti Vriksha. So the point I am making is that by coming to the Bhakti Vriksha and continuing with his Krishna consciousness, the purification to that extent came that I am not the center. Center is the Krishna. And if this Krishna asks me, yes, bring the cake and cut it. But don't bring a cake because it's just my Bhakti. You know, that starts hating us. So we run away from it. So through the process of Krishna consciousness, the purification comes to realize, you know, that anarthas are not good for us in the long term. One time, one devotee in the early days of Krishna consciousness, he was doing kirtan and he was doing fabulous kirtan. And Srila Prabhupada walks into the temple to take darshan of the deities. So after taking darshan of the deities, Srila Prabhupada goes to this particular devotee who was his disciple only, and he said that, you know, your kirtan is very wonderful. To get that kind of glorification from a spiritual master, you know, is the pinnacle of any appreciation that we can get. You know, when the spiritual master glorifies you, you know, or appreciates you. So Srila Prabhupada said that your kirtan is very wonderful. And this devotee immediately said to Srila Prabhupada that, Srila Prabhupada, actually I know my kirtans are, in a very nice way, I actually know my kirtans are pretty nice because I can see people reciprocating, but time to time I become very proud. He was honest. You know, he confided in Srila Prabhupada immediately to say, I know that I'm singing well because I can see, but then the problem is time to time I become very proud. And Srila Prabhupada tapped on his back and said, what is wrong with that? What is wrong with that? Now, if we analyze it, Srila Prabhupada writes many times in his books that pride is a demoniac nature. Then how can he say what is wrong with that? So if you understand it from a contextual, from a categorical point of view, yes, pride is wrong. But from a contextual point of view, if you analyze it, what it means is that we inhibit, you know, some sense of pride. It is better, now the best is not to be proud. But if we are not at the best, then it is better to be admired and praised in the devotee association rather than in the non-devotee association. Why? Because, as I said initially, that when we say that we don't want to do a service because we may become proud, that is pride itself, because we are proud. So cessation of an activity is not the cure for pride. If we don't do Krishna consciousness activities, then we will want to display our pride outside Krishna consciousness activities, firstly. Secondly, which will then impel us to do those non-Krishna consciousness activities. For example, if we, you know, want to be praised and glorified and appreciated and all that, and we are not actively, or we are not getting any of that at the temple, then we will go and do this in our office. We will work in the office like a donkey, you know, delivering projects after projects all before deadline, which we don't do, I'm sure. Project after project before deadline, so that we can get the appreciation from those in the office, from the colleagues. And that will boost our ego and we'll do more and more of that. Now, I'm not saying that we don't have to be productive in the office. No, don't get me wrong. But what I'm saying, if we are actively seeking it or if it sneaks in, then we will find an activity that gives us that kind of pride. So rather than seeking it in the office and outside, it is better for it to be there in the temple, because at least gradually we will get purified. Are you with me? Yeah. So, it is better to be proud of our purity, no? Or in the endeavor to become pure, rather than to be proud of our impurity. For example, no? Again embarrassing myself, before my Krishna consciousness days, you know, in during my university days, you know, when I used to mingle with my university mates, we had this, how do I say all this? Now that I have started, I can't stop, yeah? I put myself in a big hole. We used to be quite proud of, you know, how many bottles can we finish? I'm not going to say what was in the bottle. How many bottles we can finish? So we used to be proud and kind of, you know, show off to the girls, you know, that I can finish this many bottles. So, firstly, pride is wrong. Secondly, proud of something that is obnoxious itself is, you know, quite degradable. So rather than being proud of, you know, how much can I drink or how much can I eat, you know, how much can I do this and that, all the nartas, it is better to be proud of some service that we have done. Better than the best. So if we get admired at the temple for the things we do, we just have to remember, you know, that the source is Krishna, the ability is Krishna, the pleasure is going to come for Krishna, and what we are doing therefore is glory to our spiritual master. You know? So at the end of everything, you know, we always say all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Why? Because he is glorious. Or our spiritual master is glorious. Or our Shiksha Gurus are glorious. And because of them, I have been able to deliver something that you have appreciated. So it is not my ability per se. I am not the factor. Guru Maharaj is the factor. Krishna is the factor. So rather than being self-centered, we become Krishna-centered. Okay. Now, I had more to say on this, but I'm going to stop because today is also the disappearance day of Sripad Madhavacharya. So, you know, it is important, you know, to speak about acharyas, you know, on the special days. So I'll stop there and move to something else. And then at the end, I'll hopefully be able to open the forum for some question and answers. Yeah. So today is the disappearance day of Madhavacharya, and incidentally, tomorrow is the disappearance day of Sripad Ramanujacharya. So two glorious acharyas, you know, disappearance day consecutively. And if I don't speak on them, then Mahatma Prabhu will ask me to speak on them. So, let us understand, and I'm speaking again from what I have heard from Guru Sadhu and Shastra, you know, to glorify our, you know, acharya of that magnitude is beyond my ability. But at the same time, we have to do the service, you know, when it is required to our capability. So, Madhvacharya's appearance and disappearance, you know, is part of a greater plan by the Lord. This plan starts, we can call it a multi-century planning. You know, we do multi-timing planning and multi-day and multi-month. You know. Lord can do multi-century planning, you know, going over 2,500 years. So, it starts with, you know, in this particular aspect, you know, it starts with the appearance of Lord Buddha, and let's say, you know, it ends with the disappearance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, appearance and disappearance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Lord Buddha is Krishna himself, okay? And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna himself. So the Lord comes as, Lord Krishna comes as Lord Buddha, you know, to establish or de-establish, if you like, some aspect, which I'll explain. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu comes to re-establish it, yada yada hi dharmasya. And Srila Prabhupada comes to deliver it to us, you know, what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had re-established. So roughly 2,500 years ago, when the cow killing was rampant, animal killing was rampant, people were using the Vedas, or rather misusing the Vedas, for the purpose of animal sacrifice for their own sense gratification. Now, to stop them, and because they were using the Vedas as an excuse, and as we know, you know, that the Vedas does provide the concession of meat eating, you know, that is taken as truth, that the Vedas does provide a concession for meat eating, but it does not recommend meat eating. Okay. Now, for example, if somebody is a diabetic patient, and he goes to the doctor, and says, you know, that, and the doctor tells him that, stop, Baba, no more sweets for you, no more rasgulla, gulab jamun in the temple, you know, nothing. Then we say, give me at least, I can't control it, you know, I've got a sweet tooth, so give me something, like something. So when we beg the doctor like that, you know, him out of his causeless mercy, might give us some concession. half gulab jamun per week. And that's the maximum quota. Excuse me. So, now, that half gulab jamun is not a recommendation from the doctor. We cannot take it as a recommendation. And we don't necessarily have to partake in half gulab jamun every half week, 1 week. It is a concession. If you're not able to control your urge, then at least do this much. But otherwise, abstain from it. So similarly, in the Vedas, this concession of meat eating is given, but as a concession only, not as a recommendation. But what happened? The people misused this concession as a recommendation, and animal killing became rampant. Now then Krishna has to stop this. So what he does, he comes down as Lord Buddha and tells that there is no Vedas. He denies the Vedas and says there is no God, Sunyavadi. We sing in Srivapas Pranam Mantra, Nirvisesa Sunyavadi Paschatya Desatarine. This Sunyavadi comes from here. No, Srivapada is dismantling the doctrine of Sunyavadi, of zero. Because Lord Buddha said everything is zero. So, he denied the Vedas and said everything is zero. No, there is no God. Then, around 1200 years ago, 1200 years ago, Lord Shiva came as Shankaracharya. And what he said is that he re-established Vedas, first of all, but he said that everything is one, Advaita philosophy. Everything is one, there is oneness. You are God, I am God, everybody is God. Oh my God, as Bhakta Prabhu said in one of his dramas. You are God, I am God, everybody is God. So this doctrine of impersonalism, which says that Advaita, Dvaita means two. Advaita means not two, non-dualism, or oneness, monistic philosophy. Mono means one. So the Shankaracharya's philosophy is monistic philosophy of oneness was something that he explored. And when, if I'm not incorrect, when the king Ashoka, when he took to Buddhism, then the Buddhism is spread widely in India. Because when the king, Yad Acharati Shrestas, whatever, not that he was very noble, I don't know about his pastime, but whatever noble person does, the general population follows, Krishna tells us. So then the general populace become, Buddhism. So, the next progression on the rung of this gradual evolvement, or evolution, was the appearance of Sripad Ramanujacharya. And he appeared roughly 1000 years ago, actually to be exact 1001 years ago, because only last year we celebrated his appearance in the temple. So, and I remember when we celebrated it in the temple itself, And after that, Aniruddha Prabhu had posted on his WhatsApp message, on his Facebook message, something that was quite remarkable, which has stayed in my mind for a long time. When the deity of Sripad Ramanujacharya was in the temple, because the program was in the temple theater, but when the deity was brought into the temple room, so when Ramanujacharya met Srila Prabhupada, and Srila Prabhupada met Ramanujacharya, both ways, Aniruddha Prabhu wrote, that Ramanujacharya meets the founder Acharya. Srila Prabhupada is our founder Acharya, So that stayed with me, because it was a monumental occasion, the two Acharyas come together, just imagine the auspiciousness that can be created through that assembly, through that reunion. So, 1000 years ago, roughly 1000 years ago, when Ramanujacharya appeared, he gave the philosophy of Visishta Advaita. So, Advaita, as I said, means one. Visishta Advaita means that qualified dualism. What he said that, yes, to some extent he agreed with Shankaracharya to say there is oneness, but within that oneness there is variety. There is God and there is Jiva, and there's Prakriti. So he said, that the Vishnu is the soul. So for example, if I ask you, or if I have to ask you how you are, so I will say, Gaura Prabhu, how are you? Now I will not say, how are you and how is your body? We don't make this distinction between him and his body, although philosophically we understand that he is not his body, he is the soul. But addressing, we make it as one combined package. How are you? So then Sri Ramanujacharya said that, of his Visishta Advaita philosophy, that yes, there is oneness, but within that oneness there is variety. The variety of what? That there is Jiva, and there is Prakriti, and there is Bhagwan. So yes, we are one, but yet we are different. Now, Then, coming to today's pastime, about 800 years ago, when Madhvacharya appeared, and Madhvacharya is the combined form of Hanuman and Hanumanji and Bhima, and is the incarnation of Vayu. So when he came, he said very emphatically that where is this oneness? He came completely to dismantle Shankaracharya's philosophy of monistic philosophy. Where is this oneness? Nothing is one. Everything is two. So his philosophy is of Shuddha Dvaita. Dvaita means two and Shuddha means pure. So he gave the doctrine of Shuddha Dvaita. Everything is two. And he took, he took the, which our scriptures tell us, you know, of the Tattva Traya. Tattva means truth and Traya means three. So using this doctrine of Tattva Traya, which means three, there is Jiva, there is Prakriti, there is Jiva, and there is Ishvara. Using this, he gave his own doctrine of Pancham Bheda. Now, Bheda means different. Pancham means five. So, Pancham Bheda. What is the Pancham Bheda? He said, if you can follow my drawing, then you will probably register it better. No? There is Prakriti, there is Jiva, and there is Ishvara. So he said, firstly, there is a difference between Prakriti and Prakriti. Okay, first difference. Secondly, there is a difference between Prakriti and Jiva. Then, there is a difference between Prakriti and Ishvara. Then, there is a difference between Prakriti and Prakriti. And, there is a difference between Prakriti and Ishvara. So using this Tattva Traya, he gave the doctrine of Pancham Veda. That there is differences everywhere. Nothing is one. Pure dualism. Everything is two. So if Ramanujacharya, if Shankaracharya had moved the pendulum to this side, you know, to say everything is one, Ramanujacharya moved it, or Madhvacharya moved it to this side to say everything is two. And a lot of time, you know, that the answer is in the middle, right? So then 500 years ago when Krishna started at Lord Buddha, when he came back as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then he gave the philosophy which we all know of Achinta Bheda Bheda Tattva. So he brought the pendulum back in the center to say everything is simultaneously one and different. There is oneness and there is a difference. And we know the analogy that he gave in Srila Prabhupada hammered on this, you know, that you know, Krishna is the ocean and we are the drop of the ocean. Krishna is the ocean and we are the drop of the ocean. So in one sense we are one because we are also the ocean, but in another sense we are not, because there is a vast ocean of difference between the ocean and us. Quality wise, we are same as the ocean. Drop of ocean has the same quality as the ocean. But quantity wise, the drop of ocean is not an ocean. You cannot float your boat in a drop of ocean. So similarly, you know, we are, Krishna tells us, Mami Yamsa Jiva Loke. We are part and parcel of Krishna. So Krishna's form is Satchidananda. We are also Satchidananda. But at the moment, you know, forever, we are only very minute Satchidananda, you know, to that oceanic drop. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave us this philosophy of Achinta Bheda Abheda Tattva. Bheda means, you know, there is a difference, and Abheda, there is no difference. So simultaneous oneness and difference. There is oneness and there is a difference in creation. So if you like, you know, that Shankaracharya gave us the thesis of oneness. And Ramanujacharya and Madhvacharya gave us the antithesis of dualism. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave us the synthesis between the two of oneness and difference, bringing it back in the center. So we are one and we are different. Now, what is this to do with us? Two things. Firstly, if we analyze the teachings of, you know, Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Srila Prabhupada, you will see that there is a common thread between all these acharyas, between different sampradayas. There is a common thread. Jivara Sarupa Hoye Krishna Renitya Das. That we are the servant of Krishna and love, develop loving relationship with God. That is uniform. No? And if you see, and with that common thread, Krishna tells us na, in chapter 9 of Bhagavad Gita, Matha Praptaram Nanya Kinchi Dasti Dhananjaya Mahi Sarvam Idam Purottam Sutre Maniganaiva. I am the thread. No? So all these different acharyas are like the different flowers on the same thread. No? They are all very beautifully, you know, decorated on the same garland. But Krishna is the one that's the common thread between all of them. No? So that's why this word common thread comes in English. Because Krishna says that I am the thread. I am the common thread. So if you see and study the pastimes and the qualities and characteristics of all these acharyas, glorious acharyas, you know, of all the qualities they have, the one that I want to bring out today is that notwithstanding, they are absolutely amazing achievements. If you look at Prabhupada, for example, if you look at his magnificent achievement that he did, you know, in the short span of life, short span of time at the end of his life, notwithstanding all that great achievement, which is uncomparable to what we achieve, they still remain very humble. They are epitome of, you know, humility. On the other hand, if you see Daksha, you know, with little bit of prestige, you know, an achievement of being appointed as the Prajapati Daksha, because at that time he was not a pure devotee, immediately pride sneaks in. What we can learn out of this is if we put ourselves in these messages, a lot of time devotees make this mistake of differentiating and not necessarily derogating, but more like looking down upon, condescending or being condescending to the other sampradayas. To say, you know, that our sampradaya, Brahma, Madhava, Gaudiya sampradaya, you know, is the one, is the only one. Whereas what the scriptures tell us, that all four sampradayas are bona fide. Correct? And within all four sampradayas, you know, they are absolutely amazing pure devotees. Now, what Srila Prabhupada did, which we know, he kind of assimilated the best of all the sampradayas. You know? He took the philosophy of Madhvacharya, if you like, you know. Then he took the deity worship of Ramanujacharya, very opulent deity dressing, you know. The philosophy Bhagavad Gita, you know, is very close to the Bhagavad Gita, you know, of Raman, of Madhvacharya. And then he brought in the kirtan as well, you know, which is our Gopi Bhava, you know. So whatever you want is available in this one sampradaya. And that's why, you know, it has grown so widely. Because firstly, it has got the structure available whereby we can participate. You know, we have got centers around the world. But at the same time, it has got everything that the other sampradayas have. But that does not mean, as Gaurav Prabhu was saying, you know, that does not mean that we have to be condescending or patronizing the others to say we are, you know, better than you. Acharyas don't make that mistake, but we can make that mistake. And in that mistake, what is the result? We become proud. Acharyas who have given the doctrine and the thesis and the philosophy are very humble. But we neophytes, understanding few pages out of it, become very proud. So, we have to be very careful of this. If nothing has registered with you, then I'm going to make one statement which will easily resist, I think so. We, and I'll stop there, then I'll open for questions. I've got 5 minutes for questions. We don't like those who are proud. Easy, no? We don't like those who are proud. Similarly, when we are proud, nobody is going to like us. A lot of time our mind thinks that we are the unique one and everybody else is a fallen devotee. So if we don't like somebody who is proud, similarly nobody is going to like us when we are proud. So that's how careful we have to be with proud or for that matter any anartha. So rather than seeking attraction for ourselves, we have to remember that the reservoir of all attraction is Krishna. Krishna itself means all attractive. The reservoir of all attraction is Krishna, so that's where we should be attracted to. Now the law of gravity pulls us down. Gravity also is very attractive, but it pulls us down. But Krishna's law of attraction pulls us up. No matter how much fallen we are, you know, there is always room for us to rise. So gravity pulls us down, but Lord Krishna can pull us up. So wherever we are, whatever the stage of our anartha, know that you are still a candidate for purification. Know that I am still a candidate for purification. So, in summary, you know, proud is one of those demoniac characteristics that Krishna lists in Bhagavad Gita chapter 16. And we have to, you know, be mindful of it. And there are ways when we can, characteristics that we can recall when we get, you know, infatuated with this anartha. Remember the source of everything is Krishna. Remember the intelligence and ability comes from Krishna. And remember that the admiration from pride is not long-lasting. It's temporary. And we become dependent on others. So better to be dependent on Krishna for the purpose of driving our own pleasure. And in terms of all the sampradayas, Madhvacharya's disappearance there today, know that there is a common thread with all the sampradayas, all the teachings. And the scriptures tell us that they are bona fide. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purports that they are four bona fide sampradayas. So there is no need for us to get puffed up that ours is the best or something like that. No need to be condescending or patronizing. Krishna is all attractive. If we can attract ourselves and others towards Krishna, that will give us permanent happiness. So we can be, it's an honor to be Krishna conscious. Sometimes we loosely use the word that, we can be proud of Krishna consciousness. Or we can be proud of our community. What we actually mean, Krishna tells us that pride is anartha, is an offense. So that means pride has got no place. Even in a positive way, there is no place for pride. But sometimes grammatically we use it loosely. When we say pride, we actually mean an honor. So when we say, it's honor to be Krishna consciousness. It's an honor to be part of our community. So what happens then, if you look at the grammar, when we say it's an honor, there is an it. It's an honor. But when it's pride, I'm saying, I'm proud to be part of this temple. So it's about me, I'm proud. So even grammatically you can deduce that pride has got the connotation with I am proud. Then it's an honor to be part of the community. So pride has got no place. Replace it with honor. And Krishna is all attractive. So get attracted to Krishna. Thank you very much. Now I've got 2 minutes. And I can take one question maybe. Yes, two hands together. Dvaita, two. you decide who wants to be the Advaita. Okay. Yeah. Now you are inflating my prideness. Proud of? Our knowledge,
What I meant by saying that Krishna is the source of knowledge. And I'm saying that intelligence, that Krishna is intelligence. But what to do with our desire? That we might think that it's our desire to preach. That, if I didn't want to do that, then it wouldn't be that. So you think, I'm the doer, I'm desiring to do that, that's why I'm preaching. It's like then, right, the same counter.
Understand. So the question is, we have said that when pride sneaks in, we can remind ourselves that the source, the ability, the intelligence, is all coming from Krishna. But at the same time, we desire to preach, and then in that we have to share our knowledge with others. So how do we balance the two? So, as I said, the key factor in all this preaching is the Krishna factor. So for example, and I know you go on Harinams and book distribution, so this hopefully will resonate with you. We have seen many cases of Sankirtan stories coming back to say that when we go on book distribution, for example, the results are absolutely beyond our control. We go fully prepared with, a whole suitcase of books, with all enthusiasm, etc., to distribute the books. But a lot of time we are not able to distribute even a single book. On another day, when we go with the mindset, that if Krishna sends me something, somebody, some genuine soul, the books will itself sold. So as we said, the books have to be distributed on its merit. In other words, the books are spiritual. So when we give it to somebody who is attracted to spirituality, they will automatically take the book. So we have to remember that it is not our capability that is leading to the distribution of books or to the distribution of knowledge, but it is Krishna who is sending us devotees, potential devotees, who are eager to hear the message. So we become, as Krishna tells Arjuna, the same philosophy in Bhagavad Gita, that nimitta matram bhava savya sachi. Nimitta matram bhava savya sachi. Become an instrument. I have already killed these Kauras. So there is nothing to be proud of for you to kill them. So you just become an instrument of my project, if you like. Nimitta matram bhava savya sachi. So then, interestingly, if you see, and relating to this pastime as well, Krishna tells Arjuna in the same chapter, chapter 11 of Bhagavad Gita, that when Arjuna was reluctant to fight, Arjuna, rise and conquer your enemies. Rise and conquer your enemies. And then later on in the chapter, he tells them that the criteria to coming back to me is one who has no enemies. Now, this seems as a paradox, He's telling Arjuna to rise above the enemies and then saying that, if you have enemies, you can't come to me. So what Krishna actually means is that, you conquer your enemies, but not with the mood of vengeance or as a mood of tit for tat and getting even, but more as a matter of reformation for them, becoming my instrument. So similarly, when we are preaching Krishna consciousness to others, we are there fighting against, in one sense, fighting against Maya. But we are not fighting against Maya. We are becoming instruments of Krishna to transform people from avidya to vidya, from ignorance to enlightenment. So we are just the instrument. So when we go with that particular mindset that we are the instrument, then there is nothing to be proud of. And I'll give another example and I'll stop. When we let's say when we distribute prasadam, in prasadam hall, okay, pride sneaks in when we give a lecture, when we sing nice kirtan, when we do wonderful deity service. These are the places that pride can sneak in amongst everything else. But when we are distributing prasadam, the buckets are there on the table, pride never sneaks in. How many times we become proud of distributing prasadam, putting on somebody's table, on somebody's plate? Never. Why? If anything, we become the blocking stone between the devotee and the prasadam. It's like, why is he coming? Why is he saving so slow? Why is he not giving me more? So we are never glorified for that. And we know consciously that it is not my prasadam. It's been organized by the temple only, cooked by somebody else only. I'm only saving. The fact that we know that I'm not the source and creator and the cook of the prasadam, all I'm doing is absolutely just being a nimit matram. I'm only distributing the prasadam. Very clear in the mind that I'm not the source, I'm not the doer. So pride doesn't sneak in. Nimit matram. But in other places we think it's my intelligence, it's my skills, it's my achievement. And that's where the pride sneaks in. So we have to preach. There is no question of no preaching. But we have to remember that we are nimitta matram. We are just one factor in many factors. And Krishna will make arrangements for all the factors to be lined up properly, so that the success can be there. Okay? I'm going to stop here because I'm coming between you and prasadam. Tantra Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Shri Prabhupada ki, it's a Gaur Premanande.